you better introduce yourself.
I am Kate Gould.
Have you ever done much radio interviewee type stuff?
No, I'm not allowed to. Generally, I'm not allowed to be caught on sort of tape. I say the wrong thing.
How wrong do you say it, Kate?
I'm a landscaper. Well, I'm a garden designer and a landscaper, so I have a speech that perhaps my mother would not be wildly proud about.
I've been prone to that myself on one or two occasions. We were talking before this, for those who listen to this at home. You're very welcome to another episode of The Sud Show. At Sud Show on Twitter, facebook.com/The Sud Show. I had to think about that there. And sudshow.com. And I get confused now that I always say sudshow.com twice, as most you're aware at this stage of the game. And in my company is Kate Gould.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Sud Show Garden Podcast.
I was going to say that you needed no introduction. Do you think that's a fair statement?
No, not at all. I'm not big on bigging myself up. So I'm more worried that people might know who I am, which is more terrifying, quite frankly.
But you have to take that as a bit of a compliment when somebody says, I'm going to insult myself here, but Peter Donegan, who? And when I hear your name, okay, yeah, I know who that is. Does that register? Does that make you feel good? Do you get the bit where you're a bit rock star, superstar?
You must be joking. No, absolutely not. There is a lovely designer called Catherine McDonald who works for Landform. Yeah. And Catherine and I, we had very similar hair for a while. And we were often mistaken for each other. And now I've grown my hair out, we're not. But, I mean, we were like sort of, you know, doppelgangers. So people come up and say, congratulations to me. And I'd say, what for? And then I realised they were congratulating me as Catherine on my marriage or on a gold medal or something like that. So I've probably taken a lot more credit for Catherine's gold medals than she's taken for mine.
That was in 2016, wasn't it? She got married. We had her on the show, yeah, former guest. She works with Mark Gregory, another former guest. Have you ever said, guess what, Kate, me and you, you're talking to your shadow here. We've made it. We've done this. Did you ever have one of those? Or do you get to that level in garden design career and then go, oh, God, there's another level to get to?
Always, I think. Absolutely always. I think you're only ever as good as the last garden that you build. And you learn from everything. So you're always constantly learning. There's always somebody who knows how to do something different, or somebody who works for you says, why don't you do this? And it just opens up another door or another tangent, or, you know, and you go off somewhere else and you learn something new. So no, I don't think you're ever going to be as you know, you never know it all, and you never be as good as you think you are.
You did, speaking of your last garden, or the last one that jumps off the page, the 2017 garden at Chelsea. Well, you're making the loopy gesture at this moment in time. But I considered that on two levels. Well, there's a joke in there. Or three, yes. Sorry, I'm being corrected here. But I considered it on a couple of levels, to put a term on it. And number one, I thought it was quite bold and daring. And in all things bold and daring in garden design, where it's on the biggest stage in the world, there is a pro and a con to that, as we discussed pre-coming on air, which is that when you do it extremely well, you're a genius and there you are. And when you don't get it perfectly right, you tend to end up sitting in a corner, rocking back and forward, saying, how did I, why did I make this decision? Does that register with you?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of that, certainly with that garden. I mean, I drew it and I sat down with my project manager, Keith, and I said, is this achievable? And he just looked at me and laughed and said, no, it's not achievable at all. And I said, but I really want to do this, you know. And you look at it and you think, is it achievable? And then he said, yeah, not a problem. We'll finish sometime mid-show week. It's not a problem. We'll finish. We just won't finish in time for judging. But it's something that we all believed in. Everybody pitched in. And actually, sometimes it just happens. And I think unless you push yourself, you're never going to, you'll always stagnate. You'll always kind of end up doing the same thing. You use the same plants. You won't use the same materials. I know an awful lot about structural steel now that I never thought I would. I mean, the light transmitting concrete, we couldn't afford it, so we made our own. I mean, it was bonkers. The level of bonkersness in that garden was insane. You know, and Keith and I say now, he said, you know, it nearly killed us, but what doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Well, let's get into that, because there's a little Peter inside my head who has done things in horticulture I'll try to take that again and I won't edit it out. But there are things that Peter does in his life that always, I end up in trouble. Not bad trouble, just divilment, as my mom would have called it. And in garden design, I always say it's never really that controversial. However, there is a point in time where there's gardens that I've built where I know that looks better. I've gone and done that and it's financially almost crippled me. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, I mean, this one was a stonker. I've built... eight on the showground and I've paid for five, and last year's one was out of control budget wise. I mean, it really was. We were sort of in it so deep that we had to finish, and to do that you had to throw money at it, and we had a lot of issues. We found there was a pipe on the showground we didn't know about until, well, we knew it was there, we just didn't know exactly where it was, and that resulted in 18 grand's worth of cutting the structure around, a pre-made structure, 5 days before build up. You know, you either make the decision that you spent X and you want to do it well, and you make the sacrifice that you'll find that 18 grand, God knows where, under the floorboards or something, to make the garden look right, because there is no point in going on that journey and doing all of that and thinking, oh, God, that could have been better.
Two questions on different levels, whether you've done Tottenhampton, Malvern, Show Garden in Dublin, Jersey, Honolulu, it doesn't matter. There are extra zeros at the end and at the start, and equally the rewards that come after. But the pressure is therefore all relative, unless you're entering a horticultural show with a cactus and you're 7 years of age. And even at that, that's still got its own little bit of relevance to it. But did you have moments in between that garden where, and this is where little Peter is asking the question almost on Peter's behalf, to speak in a somewhat of a parallel universe, third person, but did you have moments where you wanted to turn around and A, cry, or B, just go and have 8 pints of Guinness and some Middleton Very Rare after and go stuff this?
No, which is odd. It was a horrible build. It was cold and wet. Actually, we were a crazy bunch of people with a huge can-do attitude. And, you know, any time anybody got down or didn't feel like, you know, carrying on, somebody would, you know, kick them up the arse and just really make the thing happen. I mean, there was, I think, one moment on the Sunday of judging, and we were still finishing, and we'd done some horrendously late nights, and I was trying to unwrap a sculpture with Lauren, who worked with me at the time, and we were told we couldn't use knives on it or scissors on it. It was literally wrapped to oblivion with, like, shrink wrap. And apparently I had about a three-minute... Tourette's like tirade of language that just came out of me, none of which I will repeat now because my mother would kill me, and most of which wouldn't even come out of a landscaper's mouth. I didn't even know these words existed, and then I was fine and it was all okay. But I just kind of, I didn't want to have a go at anyone, because there's no point in having a go at anyone, because everybody was doing 420 million%. I was kicking myself for asking them to do too much, and it was that kind of moment where I just needed to get it all out, and I turned round. And actually, it was finished. And it was like this magical moment, and the sun was shining. And I don't know, something must have, some kind of parallel universe must have happened. And I think, you know, something magical just happened, and it just somehow, it finished. And that was great.
Mark Gregory, when I interviewed him, what did he describe himself as? The most medals person in the history of the Royal Horticultural Society. 3 years of his working life on site. And I don't want to misquote him, even though I did the interview is there if you want to go back and listen to it, essentially. But Mark, that I remember, said that Chelsea is a place that can make you or break you. Is that a fair statement? And have you felt both sides of that?
It is. Chelsea is, I say that she's a mean beast. She's, the showground is, she's to be obeyed, and she will bite you and tear you up and chuck you down. Unless you like her. And Mark loves Chelsea. I love Chelsea. I sat next to Mark at the Chelsea press launch, and somebody was saying, oh, do you ever get nervous? Or, you know, somebody was talking about how they get nervous and have these horrible nightmares. And I said to Mark, do you get that? And he said, no. And he looked at me and I went, I don't either. I look forward to it. To me, Chelsea is a holiday. No matter how hard it is, it's weirdly a holiday, because you can say to clients, look, I'm going to be completely bonkers. Don't email me. And if your email's not going, you don't have to look at your phone for 2-3 weeks. That's brilliant.
And I'm on your side on this, in brackets, but that also reminds me the way in which you describe it, where I won't say that moment of Tourette's, or you almost want to very eloquently lose it just for the space of about 0.4 of a second, etc. That reminds me of people who like acupuncture. I don't understand you like acupuncture. Is it really?
Good for you.
It's not really good for
it
you.
It is.
No, you pay a person to stick needles in you. There's nothing like
I think
that
probably says an awful lot about me.
But you could eat cake and go for Guinness.
Yeah,
that's
like
nice.
Well. I like cake as well. But actually, probably that would be the best thing is you've got acupuncture whilst eating a cake.
Now, this is the tables are being turned to me. You're just turning into Peter. You're on the verge of heading to do not one but two show gardens and a tree, my apologies, and a return to Chelsea in the middle of all of that. I know one of them is Ascot, the yeah. new show. What's the other?
Singapore.
Right.
So yeah, so we are flitting. We are literally flitting, trying to finish all the work that we've got, and we will be going probably next, we're booking to go next month on a recce. And then we come back and we build Ascot, and then we pack that up, and then we build Chelsea, and then
can you give me the timelines and the three of them?
Ascot is April, Chelsea is May, Singapore's July. Yeah, I'm glad you've got the nervous laugh because I'm trying not to do that.
Well, for those of you who are mathematicians or own an abacus, you'll figure out with a 3-week build on site for each of them, with about a week and a half, maybe to assuming somebody else is doing all the work behind the scenes for all of the other timings, you've got essentially get off a plane and or a vehicle and get back on to another vehicle to another show garden essentially until the end of July, takedown somewhere around about August. Is that a fair?
We're out of Singapore, I think, at the beginning of the show, thankfully, like gala day, and then we're back, at which point I'm applying the jacket that does have a back and going into a padded cell. That's probably what I'm going to do for August. I'm just going to rock quietly and probably just hook myself intravenously up to gin.
Yeah, I'm warming to you now at this stage of the game. We're about halfway through an interview and I'm just warming to you. If you'd have said Guinness, I'd have ran away with you. And this show, it's not, come on. Mom used to always say, but well, everybody I knew used to say that I could never sit still. And it was like a cliche of inverted commas grown-ups to a child that in brackets shouldn't have been seen or heard in that era. And I just couldn't sit still. And it was either that or it was, there's Peter down the back of the garden. He's happy. Yeah, just goofing around with plants. And that's what it was at six. Were you both of them in that department?
I was a really quiet kid. Jokey, any people who know me as a youngster would say I looked like a Japanese boy till I was seven, and I was dressed in the fashions of 2 years' time because my dad was a tailor. So I was sort of an only child. So it was kind of this weird little package. But I'm not big on shouting about myself, so I would rather do the stuff that talks for itself. Like build a garden, get somebody else to talk about it that way they're not talking about me. But yeah,
go back a little bit. So would you have been in the Sunday Best Monday to Sunday when you were growing up because of what your dad did?
No, it would have just been, you know, it would have been velour knickerbockers and a broderie anglais blouse when everybody else was wearing shell suits.
I got blouse out of that. I've got four sisters and I got blouse. Where then did the passion for, do I call it, daydreaming and photosynthesis come from?
The passion for gardening comes from my family, from mum, from my grandparents. They all gardened, and my dad was practical. So if there was something to hit with a hammer, or if there was something to set fire to with a blowtorch, that was what I did as a child. My mother used to look on in horror as I, you know, had a saw or an ankle grinder, and my dad was like, well, give her a go, she'll be fine. As long as she doesn't lose a finger. If she does, we'll sew it back on. You know, it was a very sort of practical upbringing. It was very much, and probably that is what it is. You were referring to it earlier as, you know, what drives you, what happens is, give it a go. If you don't know it's difficult, then you can't be hampered by it, in a way.
I don't want to guess your mom's age nor your age, but if you're anything like my dad or my granddad, then it was, using big words, Ligustrum ovalifolium or Grisellinia hedging to the front. If you were lucky, you might have had a Skimmia japonica, rubella, essentially a small shrub in the bottom right-hand corner, and maybe a cherry tree out in the street, and there was a path up by the oil tank and two apple trees out the back and a few bits of lettuce and sets grown in polystyrene trays. And that was rock and roll when Cliff Richard was singing We're All Going on a Summer Holiday, and I was going, come on, seriously, someone get the DeLorean out and we'll find the Led Zepp albums, which hadn't obviously been invented then. But you're talking blow torches and angle grinders. Point I'm making is that the genres, in my eyes, in brackets, referring to myself, you would have been, there's, just leave Kate alone, she's fine with the angle grinder down the back of the garden. It wasn't the norm, Kate, for a girl, nor for that era either, whether you were a boy or a girl.
No, I don't think in the 1970s were where little girls, you know, had saws or, you know, hammers or help decorate or anything like that, but that's what I did. I was always encouraged to give it a go. I remember my dad coming, you know, if I ever went to him and said, it doesn't work, fix it, you know, whatever it was, he'd go, well, you fix it, you take it apart, you work out what goes where, give it a go. You know, he said, I used to go back to him and go, I've got 14 screws left over, but it still seems to be working. And he'd just look at me and sort of, oh my God. But, you know, talk about gardening. My first gardening memory is my mum had a butler's sink, and it was all full of Gaudetia. Now, that dates me, I tell you. So it's all sown, and all Gaudetia, and it had some nettles in it. And she said, I'll explain to you, these are the nettles, and you pull these out, and we, whatever. Only I weeded all the Gaudetia out and left the nettles. So I don't know what that says about me.
What age were you then?
Oh, I must be about 3.
Oh, for God's sake. Okay, yeah, you're allowed to get away with that one. What was your first, how do I phrase it? Because I know I entered the local horticultural society garden competition thing. Did you ever do one of them?
Nothing like that, no. I remember getting up one Saturday morning and decided that I didn't like the path in the garden and going into the garage and finding a crowbar and a pick. And by about 8 o'clock, when my parents had got up, half the path was up. But no, I was never kind of, I wasn't into grow your own marrows or anything. Although we had an allotment.
Let me put it a slightly different way then, because I remember when maybe I might be about 9 and I got an inverted commas chance, which 31 and a bit years ago. Mm-hmm. What were you doing there?
Don't say your age. Don't admit it.
Okay, I wasn't saying a fictitious number, lower than 9 or 23. Where was I? I'm off to get distracted now. Oh yeah, no, have I got it? Hold on, bear with me. We're going to put in some interval elevator music here. Just I'll try and get my bearings. Kate's after distracting me.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I got it. We're back. So they gave me a chance at about 9 years of age doing their garden, which had been done in inverted commas professionally. But they, at the time, gave me, I think it was 20 quid or 30 quid, which was a lot of money for a 9-year-old. To spend on the garden, and out of that, I think I got paid a fiver or something. And apparently, that's a lot of stickers and compost and seeds. But if you'd have said to me, what was the first garden that I did, that was a little bit Hendrix or Elvis shaking his hips, or you know, oh my God, Peter's gone wild, it's dangerous, it's not, it's just a man in an oversized coat shaking his hips. I know it's 1951 and it's all relative. What was the first step from, let's say, nettles in a pot, in a garden sense of it, to, my God, Kate's gone and done a thing, which we thought was a bit potty, but they think is great.
What was the first kind of rock and roll? I don't think I've ever been that exciting, to be honest.
You can't say tree story is exciting. Come on,
no, I mean, that was the most bonkers things. I put, you know, bed on a show. I suppose probably doing my first job. So I left school with no qualifications. I don't have an A-level to my name or anything. I education like that was not how I learned. I learned by taking things apart, and I was really practical. So school was not kind of my thing. But if I'd gone to university, I would have done archaeology. So somebody once said to me, it's just because you like mud, and that's absolutely true. I mean, you know, what I do is basically, I'm a 3-year-old in my body now making mud pies, and quite frankly, that's amazing. That's what I enjoy doing. But I worked for a company, and we had to do the filing in the men's toilets because there was no room. And one Friday afternoon, I thought, you know what, I do not want to do this again. And I booked on a garden design course, 6 months of planting design, and that was it. That was 20-odd years ago. And my tutor was amazing, Wendy, and she's still, you know, sits on my shoulder and nags me now. And she was the reason that I first did Chelsea. She said, go on.
Apply straight in. Boom. Good luck. Bye-bye.
I've built at Chelsea.
What?
I've only ever built at Chelsea. It's local, sort of. So Ascot will be, a new venture. It's, you know, I've never built another show. And Singapore will be a whole different world. I built a garden in Istanbul. But
bring me back to the first garden at Chelsea. Because when I have Anne-Marie Pell, let's say, back on, or when I maybe speak to Mark Gregory again, it's like I knew Mark's history, but it'd never been, let's say, aired on the Sod Show. But this is your first time, so the next time I meet you, I'll be able to say, well, just tell me about that garden, I guess, a little bit more specifically, or what have you been doing in the last year, apart from not drinking Guinness and eating cake? What?
Everyone does.
Not drinking, come on, man. Seriously, what type of woman are you? Where was it going? You might have to get distracted again. But what was the first garden at Chelsea, number one? And number two, do you look back on that and go, ah, come on?
Yes.
Explain that to me on both levels.
I had absolutely no idea what to expect. 2005. So if I go to a restaurant, I book a restaurant, you can guarantee, without shadow of doubt, I will get the table by the toilet. I, you know, some people fall down drains and come up smelling of roses. I fall down a drain and I come up smelling like the proverbial, you know. It's just my luck. It's a huge joke amongst friends. If I book a table, we will be by the loos. And so Chelsea, I think we were right down at the corner by the creek gate, literally by a pack of portaloos. And it was just, and it was dark and it was under the trees and, you know, you didn't know what to expect. And it was a silver. And it, I think now looking back on it, it was a damn lucky silver. Because it's, you know, you, all the plants were grown for me by somebody, but they weren't grown, so I had to go and get them myself. And, you know, you, it was a monumental learning curve.
What was that garden? Describe it to me.
It had a big copper bench in it and a wine cooler and some resined walls and a sail. I think it was what you might call throwing the kitchen sink at it. It was, you know, all in. I have learned to pare it down slightly, not much, but, you know.
At the time, was that a bit... wild, where people saying, who does this newbie young buck think she is? Or does that even matter to you?
I'm not particularly fussed what people say about me to my face or behind my back. It's, you know, you sort of, you get, we do what we do and you have to learn to get thick skin because clients can be the most vicious people in the world with what they say to you, especially on email. But I think it, for my point, it was a massive learning curve and I actually learned that what I'd found out about Chelsea was that I am a complete and utter Chelsea junkie. I'm an addict.
I'm slightly stuck for words, which I rarely am, to be quite fair about it. But I think most people will tell you there's a progression up through the ranks, be it of the shows or colleges or who you work for and the contractors and how you build up that experience. And I'm not saying it's just a perception. I think, again, if you fail on the highest level, I think you're just toast and that's it. And I've always said, look, I would never have minded getting relegated from the Premier League so long as I went out in a ball of flames.
Yeah, yeah.
As in, I'll go broke, the business will close, but I'll walk out with my head held high. Is that you?
Yeah, if I'm going out, I'm going out kicking and screaming and doing my utmost to keep my head afloat. Absolutely. You know, it's all or nothing. You're in it. You're in it to, not necessarily to win it, but you're in it to do the best that you can possibly do. And I don't think, I do that with clients as well. You try and give them the best deal. You know, you try and do the best thing for them. Sometimes you're scuppered because that's just them and they're going to scupper you. But Chelsea, the ones that I've built myself, which it's really ironic, so of all the gardens I built at Chelsea, the gold medals are the ones that I've paid for. The silver gilts are the ones I've been sponsored for. So I don't know if that worries me a little bit. We're sponsored this year. And I don't know if that's because the edge is taken off or it's not so important, because it really is, because it's somebody else's money. But I am, it's sort of, I have that cherry to pop, a sponsored gold.
You can tell me no, and I'll possibly not edit it out. When you go out on the town, are you a person who can't do, we'll say it in Guinness terms, can't really go out and do 2 pints of Guinness? I think if I'm going out, I'm going out. And I mean, you know, okay, that's it. Somebody sellotape the chandeliers to the ceiling. Otherwise, okay, I over pushed that maybe a little bit. Are you a little bit at that level or even nearing that? Or are you no?
I think I've just mentioned the intravenous gin. So, no, I'm not like that. But I am a big believer in show gardens and things like that. When you're out on a stage, go big or go home. There is no point in just doing mediocre or doing something else that other people do better than you. Do what you do. I mean, let it come from your heart, and yeah, if that doesn't sound too hokey, go at it. And if that's 4 pints of, you know, Sipsmith or gin, that's fine.
Have you ever done a garden, in this case I can only say at Chelsea, that you've turned around? And not because I felt it was wrong, even though it's got the awards, even though it's got the medals, not so much it doesn't sit happy with the public, but you look back and go, yeah, I wasn't mad about that one. For no apparent reason, just a personal thing. I mean, in my own case, I've usually tied gardens in with a song, which usually ties in with some woman deciding to, I don't know, run off like a Kate Bush song singing Ring Heights, or just ends up as one of those, which is absolutely fine. But for that sole reason, it resonates with me slightly. I don't like it. Build a garden, the garden's perfect, client loves it, I get paid, but it just doesn't sit with me anymore.
I have those in my private work. Obviously, because you design stuff for people who, and it's not necessarily your taste. In terms of stuff on the showground, probably the first one. Just, and the second was a gold, but it there's a lot that I could have done to it that would have been more polished and better. I think if you look at stuff and all you see is the good, then you're probably never going to learn. But that doesn't mean that you should only look at the bad. You should you know, you should look at the good and say, actually, do you know what? That was all right. I did that okay. It was like, I only had a conversation with somebody about the garden that we did this year. And one of the judges, and you know, we went to the what? I mean, to the wire doesn't even cut it. My hair was white by the end of it. But, you know, he said, we felt that, you know, although there were problems with the build, you know, you built this thing in 14 days. I mean, come on. And it would have been a commercial project and you would have had a snagging period. And actually, we knew that you would have, you know, dealt with those during that snagging period. And so we didn't look at them. Because we knew that they would have been fixed. And if you'd had, you know, if you hadn't had the pipe and you hadn't had to do this and you hadn't had to do that, you know, it would have been fine.
Is it a little bit series of calamities, but you end up getting there? Or as somebody said about Peter going to London, which is where we are now, if I didn't get directions from my good friend Lee, step by step, and this isn't a joke, I'd have got there maybe about 4 days later. I'd had a good time, a pretty good time, as it should be done. Yeah. But I'd still have got there. Do you get distracted easy? Do you daydream a bit? Were you a daydreamer in school?
No, I'm not. I'm quite focused. But I'm also monumentally scatty. So I have...
What does that even mean?
I have a little
is
sign.
Is that what I am?
I have a little... I don't know. Do you have a little sign in your office that says first pants, then shoes? Because you can't, you know, you might put them on in the wrong order. Or, no. You know, the laughing joke in my office is, I know if I don't say this at least four times a day, has anyone seen my phone? Where are my keys? You know, I will really happily run out to the car, try and get in it, and I've got the wrong fob. I've got the van fob, or I've got, you know, something else. And I'm like, why doesn't this work? And then I look down and go, oh, damn, it's operator error. You know, it's you know, I'm, because we all do it in our line of work. You run at 900 miles an hour and you're juggling and trying not to drop things. And actually, you just forget to do things. I went to a meeting, but I went wearing odd shoes. I'd got up in the morning, I'd gone and measured a garden. They were both blue, but they were entirely odd. Yeah, how about that for scuppering yourself?
I can beat that, but I'm not going to on this show. What's downtime for you? On a serious note, you rightly said, I think we work in an industry where you go on a trajectory upwards towards the 900,000 miles an hour and beyond, and before you know it, it starts to get dark a little bit earlier and you're having a bit of turkey and a mince pie, and then all of a sudden it's
a year's gone
and you're back to it again.
Downtime is few and far between at the moment. Okay, listen to the Zod Show. A lot. It is. It's the simple things. I like to cook. I'm quite happy pottering. I love seeing friends. But, you know, we're all of an age now where everybody's got families. And so, you know, it's difficult to get together. But, you know, WhatsApp and all those social media things are brilliant because you can just stay in touch. And I've got friends, you know, all around the world. But it is just... Actually, just being quiet is quite nice, because I will often drive places I don't have the radio on in the car. And somebody said to me, why not? I said, because it's really loud up here at the moment. You know, there's a lot going on up here. And if I've got something else blaring at me, I can't remember anything. I've got lists. I write lists upon lists. I mean, people say I'm borderline control freak, but it's the only way I can remember. Like I said, first pants, then shoes. I would literally forget. Or go off out in odd shoes, forget to put a bra on or something like that. You know, all of those things. You don't have that problem, but, you know, it's a girl thing.
There's a first for the Sod Show. New Sod Show bingo. Yeah, I've got a funny feeling that I'm probably going to see you next in the middle of probably the first two show gardens, unless you stick me into one of the containers with a tree and bubble wrap me into it, pretend I'm a sculpt. Kate Gold, it's been a real pleasure. I've been, I guess, admiring the dangerous / photosynthetic, which is not really that dangerous, but dangerous nonetheless, and you get where I'm coming from on that, of what you have done. And it always makes me smile when I get to see a show garden at the highest level, where I have to go around it a couple of times and try and figure out how they did something when I still haven't got it. And I'll talk to you about that just after. But in the meantime, thank you so much for your time. And to Bronwyn as well, who's been a real gem.
She is absolutely brilliant. We love Bron. She rules our lives with vigour and determination and makes us do exactly what we're told. Even Keith. And that's saying something.
Well, all I can say is I get on very well with Bronwyn's mum. As of today, she's not aware of it, but I do. Kate Gold, thank you very much for you listening at home. You're most welcome. For you listening at home, I was going to say, I'm distracted by the bra thing. At Sod Show on Twitter.
Your mum
won't kill you. She won't. I'll phone her up and tell her it's grand. I made you say it. At Sad Show on Twitter. Facebook.com/TheSadShow. Sadshow.com. Okay, cool. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.